Live with Lin-Manuel Miranda is over, but we're just getting started here on the SNL recap, here on post-show recaps. And now, here are the two guys who hopefully won't have to apologize about too many things. I'm Rob Cesternino. Here is Rich Tackenberg. Rich, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. I'm still exhausted from last night's show. Whew! Good stuff.
You're exhausted? Why?
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, why?
A lot of energy. It was a very, you know, whether things worked or didn't work, it was a very high energy show. And that is my favorite. I mean, obviously, I always want the show to be as funny as possible, and it can't always be. But I love a good high energy show. And I feel like that they did not disappoint from the cold open through the monologue. A lot of music, a lot of energy. So, you know, they really put the live in Saturday Night Live last night, which I'm very happy about.
See, I thought you were going to say that you went to some crazy cast party after the show was over, some middle school after theater rap party.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. So we're going to talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda, plus James Keast is going to be here with us to talk about 21 Pilots and their work this weekend on SNL and much, much more. We're going to take your questions as well here live on Post Show Recaps, hashtag PS Recaps, as we are getting ready to go. And of course, this is now what, the second of maybe three live episodes in a row here in SNL season 42?
No, unprecedentedly, the second of four live episodes. I know you didn't say unprecedented, but very rare. And I'm sure switched up. We're going to get Emily Blunt next week, and then we're going to get Tom Hanks in 2 weeks. I'm sure this is just like, we have the window on Trump. We need to maximize as much Trump cold opens as we can. So I'm sure this was not the original plan, but they've jiggered their schedule. And so second of four.
Okay, so we'll have shows then the 15th, the 22nd as well, but interestingly then right. No show the 29th or the 5th, the 2 weeks leading up to the election.
Right. Okay. They'll take the break there, which makes sense.
All right. Let's dive into this. Of course, so much talk all week long about Alec Baldwin and his Donald Trump impression. And then, of course, SNL really had to go back and probably do some rewriting come Friday afternoon. Rich, I saw on your Facebook that you said, okay, maybe Beck Bennett needs to work on a Billy Bush impression. And SNL did not disappoint in terms of dealing with the latest political scandal.
Yeah, Weekend Update guru Josh Padden tweeted a photo. He said, here's a behind the scenes look at all of the jokes we wrote Monday through Thursday. And it was a picture of his trash can, and really appropriate. I mean, again, of course, we're not going to get into politics here, because far be it from me to talk politics. But let's say, what an amazing boon for SNL, because normally something breaks on Monday or Tuesday. By the time SNL gets a crack at it, Colbert's done it. Seth Meyers has done it. Jimmy Fallon has done it. Samantha Bee has done it. Maybe even John Oliver. Friday night post taping of all the late night shows. Most of them actually tape on Thursdays anyway. It was all theirs. They got to throw everything out. We get to see what obviously was the cold open, which was the vice presidential debate, which we start with. Little bit weird where they're showing it as a replay so they can justify why they would be cutting into it. Certainly you gotta feel bad for Mikey Day and Melissa Villaseñor, who, were the opening, with Beck Bennett, were going to be opening SNL and probably were going to scream live from New York a Saturday night. And we're probably feeling pretty great about themselves Friday afternoon until this breaks. And then, at least they got a nice nod that they did have a couple of funny jokes in the beginning and kept that before throwing it over to Trump.
Yeah, Rich, what did you think about breaking the fourth wall where I don't have the new featured players name down.
Yeah,
yet.
Melissa Villaseñor. Yeah.
Yeah. All due respect to Johnny DeSilvera, I do not have her name down yet, but she did get to break the fourth wall and talk about being the moderator in the sketch.
Yes, as the first Latino female, she's playing an Asian moderator because baby steps, which I thought was a great, I like that they're calling this out, you know, just because they've hired, more African-Americans doesn't mean diversity is not an issue. I love that they call it out. They probably, especially when there wasn't this Trump piece, they probably thought, that they might get flack for not, they don't have an Asian-American. I thought the beginning before tossing it, there was a lot of funny in there. I thought there was a lot of cute. It just was like, really? We're talking about this when this amazing thing happened. I think that they kept it in A, because they had some funny jokes they wanted to play out, but B, a little bait and switch, like to keep the audience going, wait, they are going to talk about this Trump thing, right? And then sure enough, we break into the bit.
Not to mention, they probably already had the set built and everything like yes. that. So, all right. So yep. Then we go into Trump. Now, the news anchor that Cecily was playing, was that an actual news anchor?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if she was doing Brooke Baldwin. I think she was doing Brooke Baldwin, okay. She's not doing a Brooke Baldwin impression. She's just being her, being Cecily, and just using that name. But yes, I think she was doing Brooke.
Okay. And so then we go right into the Alec Baldwin Trump talking about this whole thing. All right. So, Richard, did you have any standout moments from this?
So many. I mean, and I will say this sort of taking the step back. We discussed it a little bit last week, but I want to hit it here again, which is every week last year when there was a Trump cold open, we would always say the real life events are so crazy. How does a comedy show make fun of something that's inherently funny? And last year they struggled with it so much. The last week we got a great debate thing. We got a little bit of a lift just from the fact that Alec Baldwin was new. But here was a case where they just decided to go the lowest common denominator and really go blue, go below the belt, and it worked perfectly. It was great. I thought everything about this. I mean, the apologize was just a great bit of fun. I love when he talked about that this was 10 years ago. He was just a young, childish 59. Mm-hmm. All that stuff was great. But nothing was greater than when Brooke doesn't want to say the word and he just grabs the lapel and says it. And, he's going to grab him by the pee, but really says it. Crazy it's live TV. Crazy it says it. But the idea that Trump would just lean into it and talk about, well, I'm not just going to grab it and just goes through, I'm going to bop it and touch it and blah, 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 blah. Yes, it's lowbrow. Yes, it's lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
Loved it. Loved every minute of it. Really great.
One of my favorite parts was when Trump was talking about how, what red-blooded American doesn't want to look cool in front of Billy Bush?
right. Very funny. And then the great throwaway of like, how crazy is it that the only Bush that matters in this general election is Billy Bush? That was really fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so very funny. And then what about the joke of Trump doesn't realize he's not on microphone?
Yeah. Silly, very, very silly. But they again, to do it. Yeah. If you're going to do it again, how do you top what really happened? You go really blue. So when he's talking about, I wish I was that hurricane tearing through all that hot Miami pee, and he doesn't say pee.
Yeah.
Like it was just like you're going to go there. And Baldwin, God bless him, as an inveterate a-hole himself, is not shying away. He's not pulling punches. He's not worried about his career. He's just taking the shot, and it was really fun to see him really take that and then have to apologize again for that.
Yeah, it was very fun. I thought that the blocking was really a good job in terms of having him stand up for that to show like that. Yep. He knows that he's not still on the screen. Even just like the work he was doing with his hands was really incredible. He's so funny with his mouth and what he does with his mouth as the other person in the scene is talking. It almost looks like he's going to break sometimes during the moments where he's not talking, because he's like, he's trying to he's doing all of the, I'm sure that didn't come through on
this
the podcast.
Weird pucker. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And someone of our brood on Twitter, and I'm blanking, I can't remember who we were discussing today, was saying that he thought this was the worst Trump impression. And I disagree. I'll by a lot. I mean, I think this is a very inaccurate impression. It is a highly characterized impression, but I love it, especially in the cold open. This is what you need. Big, over the top, low brow, in your face, high energy, great stuff.
Okay. So then we go and we check in with Hillary and Kate McKinnon at the party with the celebrate music on, which I have to see. I feel like that's a little played out, Rich.
Yeah, this was interesting because I thought this was a one note joke and we knew what the joke was going to be. As soon as they say we're tossing it to Hill, I already know what the joke is. You don't even have to finish the word. So I was a little like, really? This was such a strong. Why not just end it here? But again, the power of Kate McKinnon, you know, the writing was good, but the delivery, I mean, because it was just, it really was effectively the same joke over and over again. I'm deeply saddened, but she's laughing. I did love when they're talking about what Trump said and she's said it's a sad day for all women minus one. Like, I thought that was really funny. You know, the reference to that she had to endure Mary J. Blige singing in her face all hour was great. So, you know, structurally, they absolutely could have and you know, ended it after the first Trump piece. But Kate brought such an energy and fun to it that it was really fun. I don't know that I would have gone back to Trump again. I think you could have ended it there. But I thought there were a lot of funny jokes there. And then her little thing about to the women's people, the women still supporting Trump, very funny. You cray.
Yeah, your brain broke. I also like that she's incorporated like the Hillary Clinton shimmy that she did during the first debate. And I think that's a sign we could tell when Kate McKinnon is really having fun with an impression. Sort of like when she would do Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Weekend Update. She also had like some sort of like shimmy that she was doing in between jokes. It goes back to like when Bill Hader used to do James Carville on Weekend Update as well. It's when they're really like in the zone, it's like they're like the movements are like syncing up to the impression too. It's really fun to see.
And when you find something that fun and that visceral and visual to sort of tap into, yes, she only did it once in real life. Yes, she didn't do it nearly that big, but it was just such a great, and it gave her all these little, the tongue sticking out, the wink. It sort of gave her sort of an in to some bigger sort of pieces that were really funny.
Okay, so Rich, once again, Alec Baldwin is saying live from New York, it's Saturday Night Live, or Saturday Night, but still in the Trump voice.
Just give me one side. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We have all this great energy. Why do you do that to Lin-Manuel Miranda? Do you not like him? Did you not like Margot Robbie? Come on, Alec. You're taking all this great energy and you are flushing it down the comedic toilet. It is so crazy. Momentum is a precious gift in comedy and you throw it away. I don't understand why someone doesn't grab him and say, Alec, we love you, but you gotta tee it up. Or just give it to Kate. You don't have to go back. I know we're not going to have Alec, you know, for indefinitely, but give it to Kate. Let Cecily Strong do it. It killed me.
Whose job would that be? Is that the director? Is that Lorne? Is that somebody like one of the captains of the cast? Take Alec Baldwin aside.
Well, I think when you're at Alec level, it's Lorne Michaels. You know, I don't see Steve Higgins or someone having the gusto. Or maybe it's back channeled. Maybe he asked. Maybe Lorne asked Tina Fey to say something to Alec. I hear that that there's not a lot of direct communication at the higher levels. Certainly, no one in the cast has got the gravitas to say something like that. But I think it's got to come from the top and please somebody, or maybe just, you know what? You don't have to say it. Just send Alec a link to this podcast. Let him hear it from me. Alec, I love you. Come on. Kick it up.
Yeah. Okay. So we go to our monologue with Lin-Manuel Miranda, and people have been going goo goo gaga for Lin-Manuel's monologue.
Yeah, I love on Twitter, AJ Mask asked, is this the best monologue song ever or the best monologue song ever? And I wondered, and I have a lot to say, but I'm wondering, Rob, I know you don't know Hamilton. Mm-hmm. How did this play for you, basically being about a song that you don't know?
I thought it was very so-so.
Got it. And I can see that because it wasn't the funniest. This was basically written by Lin-Manuel Miranda with Streeter Seidel and John Baylor. I'm screwing up the other writer's name. I thought this was great energy and great performance. It wasn't necessarily that funny. If you know the song, Not Gonna Waste My Shot, it was so fun to see SNL references be replaced by replacing Hamilton references. But I wouldn't say that on its own, I could imagine that it was particularly funny.
And it was good. I watched it a second time this morning as well. because Nicole had said that she had heard so much about it and she wanted to see it as well. And she, like myself, is very much a Hamilton virgin. And it was, the same similar response of like, oh, OK, that was good.
Yeah. It was also hard that completely understandably he's doing this amazing rapid fire pace, but he's clearly reading it. He's not performing it to the camera. He's reading the cue cards, which of course he has to. But I think you lose a little something there. But I think it was such a great, nod. I mean, basically, Lin-Manuel Miranda's his hosting shot gets overshadowed by this amazing Trump thing that happens the night before. No one is going to be looking back and talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda 3 weeks from now other than Hamilton fans. So nice that you gave the Hamilton fans a great boost. Every Hamilton fan loved this. It was so fun to see. Fun for him to do. He did it almost flawlessly on live TV while running around the studio, while interacting with other people. So energy-wise, I give it a 10. Comedy-wise, it was fine.
Yeah. Rich, what do you think about the Trump moment when he stops at the Trump photo with all of the other recent hosts?
I loved it because I didn't see it coming, and the way that he incorporated it into the rap and the way that the payoff when he stopped himself was not, I didn't sort of see the horn on it. I didn't know it was, oh, this is going to be a Trump joke. It was just like, bah, 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 boom, hit it. And it's great. I mean, obviously it was SNL that invited Donald Trump to be the host. So you've got a little bit of weirdness there, but I thought it was a very fun moment. At this point, you're clearly preaching to the choir. If I loved SNL and I was a diehard Trump supporter, I might have felt like that was a little bit below the belt and a little personal. But overall, I thought it was very funny.
Okay, let's talk about our first live sketch. And so, okay, some interesting notes. First, Vanessa Bayer signing this season.
Yes, it was like, oh, good, Vanessa's back. She hasn't been cast out of the show. And Kyle Mooney, who did not get a ton of screen time last week, also getting some good screen time.
Okay, but Rich, I think that a lot of people want to have some questions. Two notes about the show from Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes said, thumbs up, 21 pilots, and WTF with this first sketch coming out of the open.
Now, I have to assume, based on nothing, and I'd love if our community, because sometimes some of the gang goes to the dress, can tell us, I would bet a lot of money that post-monologue was the Wounded Soldier sketch, with the butt plug sketch that we saw at the end of the night. Big set, lot of production value, lot of major cast members, and the campfire sketch was at 12:50, because this was the definition of a 12:50 sketch. And I just think that it played so well at dress that they just said, you know what, we're going to screw it and flipped it and put it here.
It was bop it, it made, and twist it. Yeah,
exactly. A little bop it and twist it. It made no sense whatsoever. It was so bizarre. I will say this, Jen, my wife, Jen and I, we laughed through the whole thing. It was all performance. It was not writing at all. It was all performance. It was so bizarre. But just the singing of Footloose was so weird and creepy. And so I know this probably on paper deserves an boy, but made me giggle. Absolutely.
I was convinced we were in boy territory.
I know. It should be. I don't understand that I thought this was so funny, but boy, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was really fun.
They sang Footloose. They were brother and sister, Vanessa Bayer and Kyle Mooney. Then they got into Jack Nicholson and Dame Judi Dench impressions.
It made absolutely no sense. There was no payoff. There was no why. There was no nothing. It was just weird performance for the sake of performance. I thought Lin-Manuel sort of grounded the sketch well for what it was. And just them continuing to up the singing of Footloose in that weird accent and not even singing, but screaming it. Just super fun. Yeah. Super fun to me.
What about Lin-Manuel's turn at the end where he likes them?
You kind of saw it coming. Nothing great for me. You kind of saw that's probably where they were going to go.
Okay. All right. Anything else on the campfire?
No, great to just see the who showed up for the cast. And I will say not too long also for a sketch like this. They did keep it kind of short.
All right, Rich, let's talk about the Crucible cast party. And I would love to know your take on this one and whether or not it resonated for you.
I think the scary part is that their take on a high school cast party was not that different from my experience with college cast parties. They're actually very similar, maybe less Sprite and more cheap 30 packs of Milwaukee's best beer and Stroh's.
Yes.
But in general, fairly on. I thought this was fun. Definitely could have been shorter, though. It's hard because as soon as I see the women together, my brain immediately goes to doing it on a twin bed. And we still haven't quite done something that's of the same level as do it on a twin bed. So this was definitely fun. I liked a lot of the specifics in it. But I don't know that I'll remember this in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I did see on Twitter people that are, you know, from this world have this experience. They all loved it. But again, I'm not sure how much it played for people who did not have this experience.
Yeah. And Aaron in the chat room saying this was a total flashback, for being a theater kid in high school. And I like the thing. If you're not normally watching SNL, you're watching it because Lin-Manuel Miranda is hosting. Almost by definition, you did theater in high school or college. So you are having this experience. There was one point when Kate McKinnon had like old person makeup still on her face that made me laugh so hard, making me think of my buddy Chris at our Barnum cast party. So this was written by theater geeks, not by comedy writers trying to guess what it must have been like to be a theater geek.
Okay, let's get into the next live sketch, which is about the substitute teacher. And, you know, I'm always a little nervous when these sketches start and it's the classroom and we bring in, okay, here's your new teacher. I feel like that the success rate on these is pretty low. So I'm interested to know what you thought about this sketch where Lin-Manuel is going to be, am I supposed to call him Lin or Lin-Manuel?
You know, let's just call him Lin. I'm trying to remember.
Is it hyphenated?
It is hyphenated, but I'm trying to think. I think just Lin.
I'll just go with that. Yeah. LMM.
Yeah.
He comes in and he is a teacher who has been out to Hollywood. Did not make it, but the kids have heard this story before.
Yeah, I mean, there was I didn't love this sketch. I liked it, but I didn't love it. But what I did like about it was that sort of meta. It was exactly what you said. I was like, wait, is this Shallon I think this is the exact same set that we used to see Gilly show up and cause trouble. Like we've seen every version of, you know, playing out the Lewis and Clark going down the, as explorers from last season. So at least I liked like that, like, oh,
Vanessa Bayer, like hippie lady, comes in this sketch.
Yes, the substitute poetry teacher. We've seen it all. So I at least like that this was fairly meta to that, that like we've seen this guy 100 times before. And I thought Lin did a very admirable job sort of keeping the energy up. The thing that makes me laugh is you've got like 35-year-olds playing high school students, and they're, you know, the kids in the seats were mostly older than the guy who was playing the substitute teacher, which was so sort of silly to me, but you know, at least we kept it moving, and the premise was not completely been there, done that.
Okay. Did you like Leslie Jones as the teacher?
Gave it good energy about they smell like hot pockets or something. I thought that was very funny. You know, I think, you know, this is a case where Leslie Jones's energy, that sort of artificial over the top to 11 energy, really works for us. Kind of kicked the sketch off with nice energy and then ended the sketch when we needed it. We need a little boost. And I think she sort of brought it.
Okay. Let's talk about the pre-taped sketch. Kellyanne Conway's Day Off.
Yeah, I think this was funny. I mean, I will admit that I'm not enough of a news junkie to say that I've seen enough of Kellyanne Conway on cable news shows defending Trump to have a visceral, oh my God, that's so funny. But I knew enough to buy into the premise that she's constantly stopping to having to defeat. I liked the build. I thought the structure of this pre-tape was nice, that, you know, she's showing up with her groceries and then she's in a towel and she's barely trying. I thought this was funny, probably more fun performance again than necessarily that it was the most writing thing, funny writing thing. I did also like that, like, each tweet that she has to defend is getting crazier and crazier. So that I would say it's gross to watch gay people eat pasta was one of his tweets. And another one of his tweets is black people have one less toe than white people. Like, at least I liked that. I thought that was very funny. And that annoying Katrina and the Waves song worked very well here, sort of to keep us laughing.
Yeah, I thought that they probably did like two or three extra beats than they needed to do. Like, I felt like we sort of got it after a while, and it was funny to get like half a note of the song and then have her back on CNN. But it probably was more fun in terms of the premise than like needing to see the same thing play out like nine times.
Yeah, and this one definitely had to be a pre-tape because you needed that cut to do it live and get those little, you know, oh, we cut to camera three, just half a second. We would have been in a lot of pain. So I'm glad that they decided to do this as a pre-tape, not as a live sketch cutting back and forth between two sets.
Although, Rich, did you feel like that this lost any juice after the events of late in the week where that, you know, the media coverage is just 24/7? Like, it's like almost unimaginable that Kellyanne Conway would even be able to take a day off at this point in time. Like, it's almost like that with all of the things that we're talking about from earlier in the episode, it's almost I feel like that this joke is kind of dated, that we're talking about Twitter.
Yeah, I you know, and again, you know, as we said, because I don't know what they're referring to, I haven't seen it viscerally, it was hard for me to lock into this. And I agree that at this point, is Kellyanne Conway even going on the shows on Saturday to defend not this tweet, but this, you know, this tape that came out, which was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, that as of today, that they couldn't even get her on any of the Sunday morning shows. They had to have Rudy Giuliani filling in on a bunch of the shows. So
yeah,
that's how tough it is for Kellyanne Conway. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our musical guest this week, and let's bring in the great editor of Exclaim magazine. Here he is, James Keast. James, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, very good. Very good. Happy Canadian Thanksgiving.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Am I supposed to say Canadian Thanksgiving, or is that offensive? Is it just Thanksgiving?
No, we recognize that we're doing this. We're jumping the gun on you guys.
That's fine.
It's because we want to get our Christmas shopping started early. So we just bump Thanksgiving up. We got to get to it.
Yeah. Well, James, we talked on the show last week about how you were not super thrilled to see 21 Pilots appearing on SNL this week. Our great friend of the show and host of many other post show recaps, Antonio Mazzaro, birthday boy Antonio Mazzaro, said, "I would. How many more pilots do 21 Pilots need to be listenable?" Says even Sully couldn't save that disaster. I would rather watch 21 TV pilots that NBC passed on. Is Antonio in the wrong?
He is. He is. I thought this was terrifically entertaining, and I know that you usually don't have me on to talk about the comedy sketches, but I thought this was a really hilarious sketch. I thought that this sort of faux SoCal ska punk band character that they've invented was very funny. I thought the fact that they had like a shotgun cocking noise and then the bass player would do the motion on his bass was pretty funny. But then later when the drummer did it with his drumsticks, I was on the floor. That killed me, that bit.
Come on. I'm going to have Scott St. Pierre standing by to come in and defend 21 Pilots.
No, I'm telling you, I watched it three times. I enjoyed it so much.
What do you feel like they were legitimately trying to be funny?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thought the drummer kind of reminded me of one of those monkey drummers that you wind up. He was really, but he was like, it was two cranks too many. Also, by the way, I think Two Cranks Too Many is a better band name than 21 Pilots if they want to use that.
What does it refer to,
James? I think Two Cranks Too Many describes what we saw last night, but not for the reason you gave.
It may also describe this podcast.
Yes. All right. So
I will say, I want to hear what James thought of the music, because music, I thought it was fine. But visually, I thought this was a deleted scene from the old Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where they time travel to 2016 and Studio 8H. And it's those two guys performing in a kooky band.
It did sort of seem that way. Even the fact that they brought like a 14 piece string section, but were still playing to a backing track, like they couldn't bring enough. Like, I assume you have other musicians when you tour. Why didn't you bring them? It was just, the whole thing was, I found, really very funny.
Okay.
And the fact that they were so, my wife was like, these guys are so SoCal. Like, they're right out of the same scene that spawned, like, Green Day and stuff in the early 90s. Turns out they're from Ohio. So, okay. That just added to the comedy for me.
Anything?
I just want to just tag in that, you know, as we were saying before the show, my wife hates all the music on SNL. She always wants me to fast forward through, and she thought it was excellent, just fun. I don't think she's going to buy a digital track, but she found it to be very entertaining, non-ironically fun, good music.
Wow. Honestly, Heathens is a fine song. It's totally like, I have no strong feelings about it either way. It's just what it is. I don't hate it.
Yep.
I would not turn it off if it came on.
So you're saying this is a radio act more so than a watch their video on YouTube act?
Yeah, although I'm sure they make great videos. I'm sure they also do that well as well. But
okay.
It just didn't, you know, I found ways to connect with it, and they were comedy.
That's good. All right. James, since we have you here, what did you think about the musical performance of Lin-Manuel Miranda?
I felt the same. I was with you. I was like, oh, I bet this is really clever if you've seen Hamilton. Like, I was like, this is good and this is interesting. But there was sort of a two-layer reaction in the audience. There were like people who were enjoying it and people who had seen Hamilton who were like really losing their mind over it. And I was like, oh, this is one of those things that if I see Hamilton and then see this again, there will be another layer of enjoyment for me.
By the way, yes. Scott St. Pierre says behind the scenes that 21 Pilots has great music videos where they ride tricycles, James.
Ooh.
Okay. All right. Next week on the show, Bruno Mars is coming back, but not to host, as the musical guest. Are you surprised to see Bruno Mars take a step backwards in the hosting annals?
Maybe he's just really concentrating on the performance, because the last time he was there, he really blew out the studio with I think one of the first live showings, live performances in North America of Uptown Funk. So yeah. He has a new record and a new single, and so he'll be debuting that, and it should be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Rich, are you surprised when a host takes the step backwards after they host the show?
We've seen it with Katy Perry. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not unusual. It probably, I would guess, James would know better than I, that it probably has more to do with the schedule, that in promoting the album, he couldn't commit a full week, which often is, you know, becomes a week and a half, to only doing one thing. So I'm not totally surprised. I think that there's a very good chance we will see him do a cameo in at least one sketch. Musically, I will leave it to James and the experts. I so love Bruno Mars. This new song loses that retro sound a lot and is much more urban or contemporary, I guess I should say, and doesn't have that retro feel, which I'm disappointed in. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see what I think as someone who's liked Bruno Mars a lot through the years.
All right, we'll see how it plays out next week. James, thank you so much. Follow James on Twitter. He's at Exclaim Editor on Twitter. And happy Thanksgiving, James.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Hey. All right, Rich, let's talk Weekend Update. And again, they had a lot of material out of the Access Hollywood leak tape from 2005 to get into on Weekend Update this week.
Yeah, this was like a closer look with Colin and Mike. They took a little page this is the John Oliver, our main story tonight. And I loved it. I mean, this just felt like just shotgun shells, just every, you know, just shrapnel from all sides. They took every, I mean, I couldn't write down jokes that I liked fast enough, that just, they hit them on every single piece. The just coming out with, you know, first when they, you know, when he said it was locker room talk, and Colin says, which locker room, Penn State? Mm-hmm. Which is like, ooh, like just, there's so many fun jokes. I just thought that these guys were having a ball. These jokes were written in 24 hours maximum. They turned all these around, and it wasn't, oh, here's the same joke reworded 18 times. It was like, let's come after the Billy Bush thing. Let's do an entire Tic Tac thing. Like, they just kept coming at it from different ways. I think this was my favorite Jost and Che Weekend Update bit since they started hosting together.
Yeah, I really did like the new slogan for Tic Tacs and the Beck Bennett read of that. That was very funny.
Yes. Yeah. It was very funny. I liked the, you know, when they talk about, like, you know, that he's, that Trump is concerned that in sexual assault, bad breath is the problem. It's mm-hmm. it's like Bill Cosby using a coaster. I thought it was really great. And then the final tag on that about, you know, hey, Trump, you might be eating too many of those Tic Tacs. I think they're turning your skin orange. It was just such a fun stuff. Really fun.
Okay, so then we set up Pete Davidson to come in, and Rich, that I thought that Pete Davidson himself was fine, but it's so disconcerting that when we like throw out like some premise that Pete Davidson didn't talk about, and we don't even come close to talking about what Pete Davidson, what we said, like, why not just say, here's Pete Davidson to talk about, even to talk about what he's going to actually talk about.
I totally agree. I will give you this, that I at least would rather this, which is, here's Pete Davidson to talk about X, and then Pete says, you know what, I can't talk about that because my hair and I got to talk for Apicia, as opposed to the shoehorn in, like, oh my God, Trump's polls are falling, not like it was falling, like my hair has been falling into the sink. Like, so at least we acknowledge that we're not going to talk about it. But I agree, if you're going to talk about a non-topical subject, just own it. We get it. Just own it. That's what the show does, especially with Leslie Jones and Pete Davidson. We don't need this sort of setup. I like that we took a break from the political commentary. And yes, I didn't write anything down. I thought that he was generally fun and had some fun observations. But it was really just sort of like, okay, well, just, all right, Pete's doing a thing. And okay, mm-hmm. that's fun.
All right. Well, then let's talk about the suburban moms from outside of Philadelphia, Denise and Doreen, who come in, and it is Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon debuting new characters, right? We've never seen them play these characters before.
To my knowledge, these are new characters, yes. And I got to say, maybe SNL world record for longest applause interruption of the comedy. I could not believe how, I mean, and I was super excited. Don't get me wrong. I was like, this is a great pairing, not a usual pairing to expect. But so the place goes crazy, and they just went on and on. I was like, whoa, okay, guys, let's bring it down. It's not John Belushi showing up from the dead to do a piece. It's two cast members. Jimmy Fallon works two floors down. It's not that crazy. But you know, they're always great. And I will say, for me, I thought this started strong and then more fun than funny. I don't know mm-hmm. that I would say this was hilarious.
Well, the bit with Jimmy Fallon that when Tina Fey's character calls him out is that she loves Trump. That was really, really strong. And just like the way that it took the audience like a wave of like 3 seconds to sort of like call back to Trump on Jimmy Fallon a couple of weeks ago. Right. That was certainly the highlight in my mind. But I did feel like that there were parts that were, you know, if it wasn't Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon, I think we might have been saying a boy at times.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and very beginning. And even, you know, Faye is so much stronger at this than Fallon. And even when she's like, they ask about who you're going to vote for, and she says, well, I'm torn from a scooter accident. And I was just like, oh, beautiful, beautiful throwaway line. The problem with this sketch, and it's like, it just harkens me back to, as much as I used to love Fallon on SNL, like, ultimately couldn't wait for him to retire, because he starts breaking and he didn't earn it. This is not, this is not Stefan. This is, this is not A-level stuff. This is just like he's just breaking and it's not earned and it's slow. It's like, but I don't even know what the next joke is. Like, I can't laugh with you because I don't know what's coming. And it just felt like it just got, I don't want to say interminable because that would be unfair, but it definitely just got like, oh, come on, Jimmy. You do one Saturday Night Live bit a year. You can hold it together. Like, just, it was just, I found it to be more frustrating than fun towards the second half of this bit.
Okay. No hoogie for Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Okay. Rich, let's talk about the first sketch after update. And again, I was at a loss here for the Music Man sketch.
Yeah, this is a hard one. I mean, this was like, okay, we're going to do, I like that we're going to do more music because we've got Lynn here. We're making reference to now a Wells Fargo scandal that now seems like 16 years ago. It's so, even though, chronologically, it's not that old, you could have done it last week and they didn't. So it did. And then to have all the news that came out this week, it felt like it was sort of a tough one. I thought it was a good idea, but I think, again, only music nerds are going to remember the Music Man, and only news nerds are going to specifically remember the Wells Fargo account scandal. So it felt like, I think Mark said this earlier in the chat room about, it almost felt like I could see Lorne Michaels saying, why now? Like, it just felt like you missed the window on this, and I don't know that we needed to go to the well.
I thought Wells Fargo. This is the worst sketch of the night, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I didn't dislike it. I thought it was well done. I found myself enjoying it, but not laughing at it. I don't know that I would say there was another sketch that I thought was worse than this. So I guess by default, I agree with you.
All right. Stranger Things season 2, Rich. Did you watch Stranger Things this summer?
I did not. It was the pre-tape before this. Diego calls his mom.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I skipped it. I'm sorry. So let's talk about Diego calls his mom. And this certainly was a wonderfully shot piece. And certainly, I think it's hard to watch this and not smile. But I don't know how funny this was.
Well, and also this was like a Mike O'Brien piece without the payoff. Mm-hmm. Like, this was such a wonderful shot, wonderfully written, wonderful tone, very well performed. And yet I kept like, okay, great. I don't know why we're watching this. What's the payoff going to be? I actually thought about Stranger Things during this. Just, I didn't see it, but it had that kind of sort of Steven Spielberg, the out in the cornfield with the phone, kind of like, oh, is this sort of be something? And then it just sort of ended. And so I sort of had this was by no means an boy, but this definitely was an like, oh, what where did we go with the what was the point of this? So this was a probably a swing and a miss, but close, because I liked everything up until the end when it didn't pay itself off.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'd say it was a miss. It was just sort of like an art film project, and it was interesting, and I wasn't hating it when it was on, but I don't know where we got to. So yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm going to guess that Alex Moffat wrote this since he was the featured player that was featured in it. And as we know, featured players rarely make it into pieces unless they write it themselves. I mean, again, I didn't dislike it at all. I just, by the end, I felt empty by the end, sort of not knowing, like, wait, why did I watch this? Even though there was a lot of fun pieces along the way.
It's going to look good in somebody's directing reel some point.
Yeah. And if this was somebody new, and it's funny, I didn't even see who I should have seen who directed it. If this was sort of a new writer director piece, trying to sort of take on the Mike O'Brien mantle, maybe this was a good first step towards something that, some interesting pieces that could come later. So at a minimum, I would say it certainly bodes well for down the road on SNL, even if for me, it was it ultimately left me a little cold.
OK. Rich, did you feel like that it was at all a political message in terms of where, he is an immigrant coming to the country and then there's the guy telling him that immigrants are taking all of our jobs? Do you think did it make more sense if you look at it as a sort of like a piece that is a, like a political propaganda?
Maybe. I mean, I did. There was a little bit of that. And we know Lin-Manuel Miranda is very big on sort of pushing to get the vote out, you know, because they believe getting more millennials out will help Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. So he's been very he even put that in the monologue, sort of dropped a specific line in about that. So could be. It could be. I don't know. I don't have enough info from it to tell, which is in and of itself says something.
All right. Well, then let's go into talking about the Stranger Things season two. So, Rich, I'm surprised that you didn't check out Stranger Things. I feel like that would have been up your alley.
No. I am a huge baby when it comes to anything that might be a startle moment. I don't even mean that is a startle moment. I mean, if I'm watching
it's gonna be too scary.
Oh, I will jump out of me. I have watched entire episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer with my hands over my face. Even watching The Night Of, there are scenes that I had to watch from the kitchen because my wife is not startled by television. My wife is startled from me getting startled by something on TV that is not startling, so that startles her. And then my dogs get freaked out by my wife getting startled by me. I'm a huge baby. There was no way I was watching Stranger Things. Jen watched it, liked it a lot, so it was fun to watch this with her. I could tell this was well done for what it was, but I don't know who Eleven is. I don't know the whole premise that the black kid doesn't have parents. I obviously don't understand that. I know Jen really enjoyed it. Did you? I assume you watched Stranger Things?
Yeah, I watched some of it. I didn't get to ever finish it. I watched the first couple episodes. Yeah, I think that they just check in with the other kids, and there's like four kids that are sort of friends in the beginning. And then Winona Ryder is the mom of one of the kids, and they spend time with the families of some of the other kids. But there's one, I guess the one kid in the group, and I didn't watch enough episodes to remember his name. They never check in with who his parents are. So that was very funny, and it's also very funny when the police show up and they're more scared of the police officer than the monster. Yeah. It's very funny.
And that's what I like about a really good sketch is one where even if you didn't see the thing you're parodying, the setup was so good of like, this is how black people would react to this situation. Even when they're talking about the land of upside down, which I had no idea what that was, but they set up what it is. And they're like, and Keenan and Leslie are like, well, it sounds like you're talking about every day for a black person like that. You're going to be facing a lot of that. So I thought even not knowing the show, I thought it was very funny. Like that this was actually written by Sashir Zameida with assistance by Kristen Cheeks, a writer on the show. But Shasir actually wrote this, which I thought was fun. So I thought really fun that they could sort of include even non-fans of the show you're parodying and get some real fun laughs out of it. So especially for this late in the show, I thought this was really fun.
Also, I like the combo of Keenan and Leslie Jones together. I feel like that it's been very few times we've seen them as a couple.
Yes, and I thought they did a really nice job. They were really fun together.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Notably, when it was the game show of Meet Your Future Wife, I believe that she was his wife.
Yes.
On that.
Yes. Although but, yeah. It brilliantly did not have any lines in the killer part. The look was better than any of the lines. It was very funny. Yes.
Okay. So the second week in a row, we have a Melania moment. This one certainly more absurd than last week's Melania moment.
Yeah, I actually like this one better than last week. And sure. No disrespect to last week's. I thought this was funny, but I thought the absurdity of this just waking up and knowing that her replacement had just been born in rural Latvia was a very sort of fun nod. And then her like, I've got to go kill her for her sake was just such a great, like, you know, bizarro. We're sort of in the bizarro Melania point, which I think is great. It's just really fun. I did think it was interesting that this season, we have not seen Melania. We have not seen Cecily's Melania with Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump, probably just because we haven't needed to, because there have been such big events along the way. But I hope that before Alec goes away, we get to see the two of them together. I think that could be really, really funny. But okay. This was definitely a win. Really good.
Yeah. I think that they went to commercial break. Like they come back from commercial break, they have that, and they go to commercial break again. I think it's too much of a tease.
Yes, I agree with you. It's true. And we're getting to the end of the night. We're ready to start wrapping it up.
Okay. And then finally, we have the, what is this? I guess a World War II film. Yeah. a degree of valor. And I actually really did like this sketch with Lynn is playing the army officer, and Pete Davidson is trying to tell him first, like, to go say goodbye to his girlfriend, and then a bunch of other errands that he needs him to run.
Yeah, you know, again, this is another sketch on paper. After we get the butt plug reference, the rest of it should just be, okay, more of same, haha. But Pete was funny, Lynn was funny, Keenan always, Bobby, very underutilized, great reaction line, like you know, great. So just in general, I thought this was really funny. This definitely worked better at 12:50. If this had been post-monologue, I think I might have been saying, oh boy. But here, I think it was the perfect way to sort of close out a very silly show with a very silly piece of business. And I thought it was very funny.
Yeah. Any photos of you being sassy, Rich?
Oh, too many to name. There's many sassy photos. I think they were all published on the spot back in 1995, but no one has to ask me what that means.
So then the goodbyes. I know people are very much up in arms. No Alec Baldwin again in the goodnight.
Come on. Come on. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Jimmy can stay. Tina can stay. Last week, Larry stayed. What do we have to put a chair for you? Like when a rock star hurt his leg and you know, we have to like wheel you out or something. Like, come on, Alec. It is a disrespect to the show. It's a disrespect to the institution of Saturday Night Live that you can't hang out and be there. Very frustrating. Other than that, very fun. Lynn looked like he had a great time. Obviously, everyone was super excited to have Jimmy and Tina there. They were sort of the stars of the of that and fun goodnights in general.
All right, just quick, as we are two episodes into season 42, any broad strokes thoughts on season 42 through two episodes?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I will say quick broad stroke about this. Very interesting to note that a big news story of the week, Hillary's emails came out about things that she said during Wall Street things, not even addressed once, even as an aside in the cold open or in a Weekend Update, which I thought was very interesting that they didn't even throw a anti-Democrat joke in the mix in a 90-minute show. And I'm not reading into anything other than saying that was very odd to me. Mm-hmm. Of course, Trump was going to be the main story, but it was odd that we didn't even touch it.
In fairness on that, though, if I'm correct about this, that didn't those leaks also come out on Friday? And we talked about how there was such a scramble to get to all of the Trump stuff on Friday that I don't know if there was also time to scramble to write a bunch of jokes about the less hot story for a Saturday show.
I think that you're right. I'm surprised that they didn't take a couple of minutes. Anytime politics comes up, Lauren is always very clear to say we are not political. We are a comedy show. We make fun of everything equally. I'm surprised someone didn't say, come on, guys, at lunch today, let's come up with one Weekend Update joke slamming Hillary.
It's a fair point.
Just throw one in. Just lob one in the middle. So, you know, between the clown posse, whatever that was, like we could do one Hillary joke and move on. So anyway, small point. But I would say generally strong beginning to season 42. I'm suddenly sounding so much like Jimmy Pardo in my head because I've been listening to a lot of him lately.
Lorraine Newman.
Very strong start. I thought this was, again, not everything worked. I thought there were very few absolute clunkers where I couldn't wait for the sketch to end. Some things really made me laugh. Some things made me sort of go, okay. But just, you know, the batting average of the first two episodes, very strong, obviously buoyed by very strong cold opens because of the timeliness and Alec Baldwin. But they have had the goods to sort of carry us through, for the most part, whole episodes, which have been great.
And sorry, Richard, that you said Jimmy Pardo, and in my head, I thought you said Don Pardo. And
it was more a nod to myself than anyone else. Yeah, I heard myself saying more. Yeah.
All right, let's take it. We have a couple of questions here today. Of course, next week, if you want to get it on the show, hashtag PS Recaps. Even if you send out the tweet before we get to recording the show, we'll get it into the podcast recording. Johnny D. Silvera, he was all pumped up. Say it ain't so. We're not going to get Alec Baldwin's Emotionless live from New York all year, like Daryl Hammond's credits. Rich, do you think there's any chance Alec Baldwin will switch gears?
I unfortunately think that there's no, I don't think you tell Alec Baldwin what to do, and Alec Baldwin is making a choice, and he's clearly made his choice, and a bummer for us, because I wouldn't trade Alec Baldwin right now for anything, still not, it's just rough. And I think we're in for this for a while.
Okay. Anna Morphew says, do you think that they had something else planned with Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon before the new Trump scandal, or did they bring them in just for that skit? It seemed like such a waste. I don't get the sense that Tina Fey and Jimmy Fallon were talking about had anything to do with the Trump Access Hollywood thing.
Yeah, I actually think it was more about the fact that they were saying it's coming down to as little as undecided voters in this one territory. I suspect that they would have done more about what they thought about the lines that he said. I think Tina Fey, with more time, could have written some really funny jokes that we'll see. That I was sort of surprised by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That might be a spot where Jimmy Fallon, as you pointed to, might be holding her back, where we've had Tina Fey come on as, she, I believe with Amy Poehler that her and Amy yeah. came on to talk about like Hillary as a woman. What does that mean? Maybe that might have been a better use of her than these characters that they just came up with.
I agree. I definitely agree.
Okay. And one other one, Josh Mabe, with Hanks hosting, making it 4 weeks in a row. Do you think that we'll see a new show each week till the election? Do you think there's any chance that we'll do six straight, right?
No, I don't think so. I think that we'll take a week off after Tom Hanks, and then, but I don't think they'll take 2 weeks off. I think they'll come back after 1 week. I think they're going to burn hard right now, and push everybody to do four in a row. And, you know, and by the way, and we'll talk about it next week, but you know, I'm very interested to see that Hanks show, because four in a row, this is going to be a writing staff that is burnt out. And sometimes that can be rough. And sometimes you can get absolutely deliriously hilarious sketches. So we'll see what happens. I'll talk more next week about what we could see with Hanks returning. I'm very happy that he's coming back. Not to take away from first timer Emily Blunt hosting the show, to obviously to promote Girl on a Train, Woman on a Bus, whatever that is. Should be. I think she'll be very good as well. Maybe we'll see her husband show up for a cameo next week.
All right. Well, we will see next week. We'll be back again next weekend to talk about the Emily Blunt, Bruno Mars episode of SNL and whatever other craziness happens tonight. SNL gets sort of a raw deal with the debate being on a Sunday. Debate probably will be very old news by the time we get to back to SNL this week.
I agree. I think this is what I said earlier on. This is by the time we get to see Alec Baldwin taking his pass at it, that, you know, it will have been picked over to death by everybody else. Although, you know, we did have, last time, I think it was on a Monday night. And then, you know, Saturday Night Live still had a very fun, fresh take. So we'll see what happens.
Too bad with this election cycle that there's been no news to talk about, and there probably won't be anything left for SNL to get to on Saturday.
Yes. As Colin Joe said, this isn't even the craziest thing Trump has said. This is just the craziest thing he has said to Billy Bush while being mic'd on Access Hollywood. So we got 2 weeks. A lot can happen.
A lot can happen. All right. So fun stuff. Of course, you could follow Rich on Twitter at Rich Tack. And of course, James Keith is on Twitter at Exclaim Editor. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre for getting the show up and running. And of course, editing the podcast version of the SNL podcast, which you can get on iTunes. Go to postshowrecaps.com/SNL iTunes, postshowrecaps.com/SNL iTunes. We do appreciate your feedback and star ratings there as well. Rich, anything else?
No, I think we're good. Let's buckle up. Got another couple of weeks to go.
All right. All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, Rich, the show's over now. What do you think?
Think of what? The episode?
No, I was gonna do off mic jokes.
Oh, right.
I won't. I'll spare you guys. Bye.
Oh.